You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Maurice Meyer. Now we're talking.
This is Type Radio.
Now we are talking.
This is Type Radio.
Now we're talking.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the Robothon 2018 conference. It is March 9th, 2018, and our guest is Maurice Meyer. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
We have a standard first question, and that is, are you religious?
I'm not.
So it's in no means an influence in your work or...
No.
Do you have rituals?
Do I have rituals? I like to be in specific places when I work. I have my chair at home. I like to surround myself with books at school. So I think that, yeah, rituals in that sense I do certainly have. Like, I don't feel comfortable working in spaces that I don't occupy or fill with my own stuff or surround with things that I've made or that I really appreciate looking at. There are certain pens I like to use and pencils. I think those would count as ritualistic objects in that sense. So, yeah, that's about it, I think.
And books? Which particular books you say you want?
Well, I'm a huge... Well, just about all the books that I've collected I like to surround myself with. But the ones that I'm thinking about particularly right now, because I'm visiting Robin Kinross in London in a couple of days, are hyphen books. And I was just thinking recently about how much I... So this is sort of a second career for me. I was a political theorist before this. And I... learned how to do graphic design from books. I really taught myself how to do it, and the first and maybe most influential books that I ran across were Hyphen's books. So I'm thinking particularly of Fred Smears's Counterpunch and his Type Now. I'm thinking of Ken Ross's Modern Typography and his collection of essays, and Karl Martens's the Printed Matter. Those are books I have second copies of. Well, not printed matter, because it would cost me a lot of money now. But I have second copies of those so I can lend them and not lose them. But those are particularly important to me, or those ones that are sort of at the front of my thinking right now.
How do you move from a political work environment to design?
I got fascinated with type and the structure, just the nature of the books that I was reading for my PhD. And the first typeface that I remember noticing and thinking, what typeface is this, was being used in the New Left Review in the sort of second series. And it was Martin Meyer's Scala and Scala Sans. And I remember when I initially ran across it and thinking, this is a gorgeous typeface, and like, how come it's not on my machine? And it was in the process of, this was like not too long into the history of the World Wide Web. So this is maybe 98, 99. And so I actually had the opportunity to get online and try to figure it out. And then I ran across Speak Up, which was under consideration, sort of their bulletin board / blog on design. And that was sort of what broke things open for me. So it's just realizing there was a world of graphic design there out there in the first place, and then making me notice all the more the typography, frequently very bad, I have to say, typography in a lot of the books and magazines that I was reading, and just kind of snowballed from there, actually, to the point where I became more interested in those things.
Yeah. But was there a sort of a dissatisfaction with the situation you were in, or like the things you were doing before?
I don't know if I would necessarily say dissatisfaction, but I think maybe just declining interest, actually. So I was, my wife now, but at the time I was just starting to date her, she would notice as I was finishing the PhD, she would say, well, I can't help but notice that you say you want to be a political theorist and you say that you're really interested in a career in doing this, but you spend all of your free time doing nothing but reading on type and reading about design and information design. And you sure this is something you want to do? And, oh, yes, I'm very, very interested. But I think just over time, I just got less interested in it, more interested.
Is there any similarity between, politics and type? I mean, in your study.
In my study?
Yeah.
I found myself at least initially being really attracted to information design because I thought that that was particularly relevant. I think I've drifted away from that a little bit now, where I'm more interested in just sort of formal research and analysis and type in itself. But I've written on sort of type and politics before. And so I probably won't ever lose that interest I won't ever stop seeing that dimension in design generally. And I talk to my students about it. But yeah, I have to say substantively, no, I don't see a lot of overlap between them. to be honest with you, not at least the way I was studying politics.
So you don't miss anything of your previous life?
I find myself still in touch with my cohort and my dissertation chair. And there's a little bit of the give and take of the seminar room that I miss. And I'm much more natural at lecturing, than I am at actually doing like studio critiques. But no, I don't look back on it with any kind of wistfulness or anything like that.
And like the current political situation in the U.S., I mean, that must have sort of make you feel, I can imagine you are relieved that you're not in.
Well, I feel a little bit guilty because even though I was a political theorist, I did teach a lot of American politics courses, both as a graduate student and then when I was working. And I feel a little bit bad about that in retrospect because, the textbooks that we taught from and the way that we were sort of encouraged to think about the American political system was to think of it as being much more robust and stable than it actually turns out to be in real life. And so I kind of feel bad for students who walked away from my classes maybe being a little bit sanguine about how the system would respond to the kind of challenges that it's been facing recently. So a little guilty, I guess.
Yeah. But you don't feel inclined to get back in
to
change it? Or
no, at this point, yeah. In that sense, no, I'm totally relieved that I don't have to rewrite textbooks.
You're also very much a coding kind of a designer, based on codes and systems and...
Yeah, very much, I think. Increasingly, for sure.
In what way do you see the developments in technology change how we look at type and perceive type?
Well, one of the things that I've thought about as I've kind of noticed technological developments in type over the last, say, 10 years, is it seems to me that we're really reinventing what it means to actually do typography. That for the longest time from, if you just want to talk about it in the European context, from Gutenberg up until not very long ago, a font was more or less a static collection of instructions for how to reproduce the design of a typeface. And it didn't really matter if you were talking about cold metal, right, something that was, sort of traditionally made, or hot metal or wood or film, and even early digital systems, right, where it was just this sort of static set of directions, and whenever you needed to reproduce an A, it was the same set of directions to make that A over and over again. And now with the introduction of variable fonts and browser technology being where it's at, and I'm certainly not an expert on this, but I think it seems like those instructions have now become a lot more fluid and a lot more sort of dynamic, so that it's no longer, okay, I have to make an A and I'm going to call on this predefined set of instructions. Now there's interaction. It's almost like the barrier between the instructions and the context in which those instructions are applied have become really porous. So that now the design of the A can respond to real-time information, something that, coming, it could be the weather, it could be news, it could be how many times a page has been refreshed or how many times a person has seen it. And so a lot of the things that we used to assume were the case about typography seem to be starting to get thrown up into the air, where we really have to rethink, like, can you even talk about there being a font now? Like, what does that mean to say that I have a font or that I've like loaded or downloaded a font? It's now very much more fluid and flexible. So could you actually have typography without type is what I'm starting to ask myself.
It's also becoming a lot more emotional, mm-hmm. and it's no longer digital starts to have another meaning.
Yeah.
That it is. I also felt that I was looking through your work. There is a lot of technical skill, but it's also becomes more tangible, or it has, you can feel it.
Yeah.
As opposed to just pure code and well executed.
Yeah. No. And I think I've become kind of like, I'm enamored by the moving aspect of it, which I know that, what I'm doing is pretty simple compared to what a lot of people that are really enmeshed in variable font technology and think about how it can respond to contextual application are doing. I feel like what I'm doing is a pretty simple version of that, but I'm really attracted to that. And yeah, with that motion, it actually does feel tangible. It feels like something that you're actually feeling as you're watching it.
It feels like it's a beginning of a...
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I'm really new to code. So in the process of getting my MFA, which I did while I was still working as a political theorist, I took 2 semesters of interactive design. And not a lot of it stuck with me. And I think in retrospect, the reason was that I didn't really have a reason to learn it, except that it was part of the curriculum and it was something that I was, you know, kind of needed to pick up. And it's not that I felt like I was wasting my time, but none of it really carried with me after I was out of those courses. And I didn't think it was going to be part of my practice. And it wasn't until taking Joost van Rossum's Python and Drawbot workshop at Typographics in New York City in 2016, and then having this project that I've been working on in modular script, and thinking, oh, I think I actually have a reason to use this now. Like, I actually have a goal, something I wanted to make. And at that point, it became much easier to apply it. So it's something that's super new to me. And it's absolutely fascinating to me. It's like something I think about increasingly, to the point where I'm wondering, you know, I'm certainly interested in seeing this research project come to its completion. But I'm also thinking, what if I just dove into the code more? What if I spent more time coding and less time writing? Maybe, you know, waiting until I really have something to say before saying it. So, yeah, I would agree with that. I think it does feel like
it. Is that also something that you teach your students?
I teach typography and design research. So I talk to them about code, especially when I'm talking to them about their professional lives. But it's not something I teach. There's other people, other faculty members where I work that teach the interactive courses. But I've been thinking increasingly about, so Python is not part of the curriculum. And I've been thinking increasingly, it's like maybe I should offer to the students, like, you know, 2 or 3 day workshops myself, you know, using what I learned from Joost and from other people like Frederick Bellan, who's been really, both of them and other people in the Python community have been super helpful. Taking what I've learned from them and trying to, like, just expose my students to it. Not even pose myself as I know this stuff and I want to share it with you, but look at this amazing tool that's out there, right? You know, in addition.
Make them aware of it.
Yeah.
What is the most important lesson then to pass on to your students? Like the one thing that you would say just before they leave.
When
you
say just one before
more,
I leave?
Yeah, well, one more thing. Well, the one more thing.
I don't know if I would say like the one more thing or anything like that, but one thing that I do find myself saying to my students over and over again is don't be so sure where you're going to end up. When I started my undergraduate career, I thought I was going to be a concert pianist. I started off as a music major, and then I got completely captivated by political science, and I ended up majoring in political science and getting a PhD. And now here I am teaching graphic design. And if you had asked me when I was 18, what was I going to be doing when I was almost 50, I assumed I was going to be a musician, and I'm clearly not a musician.
But do you still play?
You know what? I don't. I haven't had the opportunity. I was a pianist and I just don't have a piano that I travel around with. But so I tell my students, I go, you know, I know that you really want to do this and you should pursue what you're dreaming about, what you really want to do. But don't trick yourself into thinking that things can't change very radically over the course of your life, where you find yourself completely interested in something else.
And now it's even easier to change.
Yeah.
I think... 2 generations before, it is more like, okay, one job, one life.
Right.
Now,
that's super true. So. And Peter, if you know, Peter van Blokland makes that point when he talks about PageBot, and he sort of starts off with that timeline and how he's talking to his design students about thinking, look, up until about 40, 50 years ago, maybe even more recently than that, if you wanted to be a designer or a typographer or compositor, you grew up learning a certain set of skills and you would use those for your entire working life. And you would never be forced to sort of call into question what it was that you did. And now the technology is changing so quickly that you might be called, you know, by calling those things into question maybe 5 or 6 years after you graduate and you find yourself working. And suddenly there's a new technology or new software applications, new whatever. And so whether you want to or not, you have to think, what is it that makes me, as a designer, for example, what is it that makes me a designer and not something that can be replaced by this new technology? Like, what am I really doing? What value am I really adding to this I'm making? So there's a frightening side to that. Yeah.
Do you ask these questions always to yourself?
To myself and all of my students. And sometimes they find it super depressing or scary. And I say, well, there's no point in being scared because it's going to happen anyway. So just think, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, be prepared.
Yeah, exactly.
Final question. How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, you know, I think that the pat answer is I'm not planning on dying. So I think I want to live till like 200 and I'm not, you know, I'll live everybody. I think at the end of the day, I'd like to be remembered as somebody that asks hard questions, both of myself and of my students and my friends. Not constructive, not jerky questions, but just is willing to ask kind of difficult questions and really be interested in hearing what the answers are to those things. And that's kind of how I pursue my research, and it's how I encourage my students to think.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. This is Type Radio. Oh, we don't know what you want.